You're tuned in to the Anti-Failure Podcast, where we talk with small business owners to tell their stories loud and proud. We want to share insights and learnings from the inevitable failures that are part of the journey to success. I'm your host, Chris Kendall, and in the booth with me today is Terry Aliff. Terry is an artist, photographer, writer, psychologist, retailer, chairperson, director, and public speaker, just to list a few. There's not a lot that you haven't tried your hand at, Terry, building quite a few successful small businesses across vastly different industries. With such a variety of business ventures and activities, can you give us an insight into your journey so far?
Yeah, sure. I have an entrepreneurial mind, always have. No matter what I go through, I kind of come up with ideas pretty quickly about how I could turn that into a business. I have to slow down with a lot of that stuff because I can get carried away with it.
Right.
And Matthew, my husband, is the one that can pull me into line and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
You've got enough on your plate, I think.
And how do you make that choice then on what is something that really gets you energized or motivated to do something about it?
Psychology has always been my thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I can help on a psychological level by creating something that is new or interesting and gives people a soft place to land, whatever that might be, that's where my interest sits. My art is really from that point of view as well. They're mainly portraiture.
Yep.
I love to explore the emotional side of humans and how we respond and react.
Yep.
And within the business that we have now, my forte is working with staff. So not so much in a therapy capacity, but
sure,
to identify their strong suits and talk to them about what they want and is there a place they'd rather be in the business and can we move you that way? And so people are my forte.
So that's an interesting concept. And you mentioned matching people with strengths. Talk a little bit about how you do that. Is it something that you see in them? Is it something that comes through discussion? How do you go about finding that fire to ignite for them to pursue something that they're strong at and interested in?
I seem to have a skill at being able to read people well, and I am also an avid listener, so I never take one thing without the other.
I
make sure that I have the conversation with them and I'm not making a mountain of assumptions.
Yep.
And it's just basically encouragement. So if we have a junior at work, one of the first questions that I'll ask is, where do you want to go?
Yep.
Are there courses you want to study? Yep. What would you like to turn this into?
Yep.
And we're good at encouraging our young staff to study or to go to TAFE or to do whatever interests them. We also, I have put together at work some small training packages, which I'll be presenting over the next couple of months. So they're leadership packages. So we will bring together our leaders and we will discuss, you know, what to do with conflict, how do we manage our clients better and all those sorts of things.
Working with them on equipping them with the tools necessary to do their job, whatever their job may be. It could be somebody in the warehouse or it could be somebody in the office. How do you identify the skill gaps and then what do you do to fill those?
Well, with our senior staff, we offer them the opportunity to do management courses online or to do whatever they need. But I also have extensive conversations with them to work out with them where they feel the shortfall is, where they feel that they're missing, where they feel that there is something there that they could use or utilise. Matt and I have always believed that our staff are the central point of the business. Always. There is no business without them at all.
Yep.
So we ensure that their well-being is foremost. We make sure that we encourage and protect and look after them in every way that we can.
Yeah, and interesting to me is that you and Matt started this business, by the way. Give us just an overview of what Alchemy is and the industry that you're working.
Alchemy is in the events industry. So we are suppliers to the events industry, which means that we have a construction department which will build whatever somebody requests, might be a mini version of the opera house, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have incredibly skilled carpenters and foam sculptors and painters, and we do everything from Thor's throne in the Thor movie to large conference sets.
Yep.
We have a print department as well. Years ago, most of the artwork on things was done through Scenic Art, but okay. Now it's all print-based.
Right.
So we have that, and we have a logistics section which moves our stuff in and out or helps other people in the industry move their stuff in and out. And we have our project managers that bring the projects in. Does work very tightly with clients to make sure that we understand their brief and that we can make that happen. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a real opportunity to match yours and Matt's creative energy and creative skills with serving clients, providing opportunities for your team, and ultimately building sets that inspire and create people who experience them. Can you talk a little bit about how that works, or how do you combine all of those creative things with the business skills of being able to generate profits?
Well, my husband's an extraordinary human being. He has left, right brain going full pelt all the time.
Interesting.
I've never often met somebody who has both sides of the brain.
Right.
And he can utilize them in unison,
yep.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, right.
I think I probably have a little bit of the same going on. But he was a carpenter.
Yep.
And was building houses or doing form work or doing whatever and found it unbelievably boring and monotonous.
Right.
So then he got into the film industry and he worked on the Matrix films.
Okay.
And then decided that this is where he wanted to be. So he worked for other companies for a while. And then when I met him, he decided that he wanted to start this business.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So he could employ his incredible creativity into a structure that could create things. And yep. Then we found that there were plenty of people around Sydney that were interested in that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they all came and worked with us, and the business grew from there.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting observations I've had, we've been working together for a little while now, is that you and Matt have this ability to get out of the way of people who you trust to run your business. Sometimes that's worked, and we'll talk a little bit about the painful experience in a minute. But how do you let go of that sense of having to control it all and balance that with empowering people to chase what they want in the business as its forum?
Mm-hmm. It's been far more difficult for Matt than it has for me.
Right.
Because I have a background in psychology, I understand that guidance,
mm-hmm.
Allowing people a stage,
yep.
And then guiding them through what they want to do is the way to go. Matthew, on the other hand, has learnt that.
Right.
When you start your own business, one of the most difficult things to ever do is to let it go,
mm-hmm.
is to let go and let other people take the responsibility, because you've designed it from the ground up.
Yep.
You understand it better than anybody in the place. You also understand the enormous responsibility of it,
yes.
Especially to your staff.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up in this situation where allowing other people to stand
mm-hmm.
and do what they need to do on their space
yep.
means that you need to let go. But that's a double-edged sword, because if you let go and they fail, then that you can't pay them, and then you're in a predicament. So I've worked for a couple of years with Matt,
mm-hmm.
trying yep. to, as his therapist,
yes,
trying to get him to understand that people can't shine if they don't have the spotlight.
Right.
So you end up in this quandary where mm-hmm. if you don't give them space, they can't shine.
Yep.
And if they don't shine, they can't rise. So we have learned that, and we've probably learned that lesson better over the last couple of years since COVID.
Yep.
That has taught us a lot.
And inherently then part of that process has to be deciding who you're going to trust. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you've had a bad experience on someone who you trusted. Do you want to share a little bit about that journey and and then maybe the lessons that came as a result of that.
Yeah, sure. We had a partner. Matthew went through a phase with the business where he felt the responsibility of it quite heavily.
Yep.
And he really wanted to share that responsibility. At that point in time, I was doing something else and it wasn't going to be me.
Right.
Purely because I like him.
Yep.
And we don't work together. Not that closely anyway.
Yeah.
And then the person that we had brought in as a partial partner was inadvertently scammed out of the company's 300,000,
yeah.
278 or something.
Yep.
Thousand in a matter of overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Matt and I discovered it because we got up very early that next morning to go to work and had noticed all the money was missing from our accounts, and the withdrawals on that, transfers of that money, was in names that we didn't recognise. And right. I was the first one to go, oh, hell, we've been scammed.
Right.
Anyway, Matthew was due to get on a plane
mm-hmm.
in 2 days' time.
I remember the phone call.
It was one of the worst times of my life.
Yep.
And he was going to cancel,
mm-hmm.
But it was his 50th birthday present from 2 years ago because COVID. We were in mm-hmm. lockdown, so he couldn't go.
Yep.
And I insisted that he go.
Yep. Which was probably good for everybody.
It was, because mm-hmm. There are times when I'm the more logical one and mm-hmm. he can be the more emotional one,
mm-hmm.
and there are times it swaps.
Yep.
So
yep.
I could see that he was getting wound up. And I thought the best way to deal with this mess is for him to get on a plane. So he got in a plane and went to the jungles in Sumatra where you couldn't contact him very
Perfect.
Well.
Yep.
And when he was out of the road, I was shell-shocked.
Yes.
Absolutely shell-shocked.
And as a small business owner, $270,000 is a lot of money. I mean, that's a lot of blood, sweat and tears from the people who you trust to deliver the business. And this wasn't a case of being scammed by the person who you'd trusted. This was a case of them being scammed.
Yep.
And perhaps naive in the way they applied the principles of awareness.
Yes. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about how that process unfolded, and then we can talk about how you recovered.
Mm-hmm. The process unfolded because the person that was our partner actually had the ability to move money around in our accounts.
Single point of authority.
Which I wasn't aware of.
Right.
I want to specify that.
And I think this is we're going to talk about the lessons, but this is 101 from an accountant, my background, is that you never put a single point of failure on anybody, whether it's money, whether it's business context. Our role as business owners is to distribute that risk.
Absolutely.
Mm.
So I was unaware of this situation and I didn't quite understand how it had evolved. But what had happened is that there is a scam that everybody, I'm sure, is quite aware of these days, where they ring and say that there's been a hacker in your account and that they're defrauding you. And so then they go through the whole process of setting up a new account, transferring the money from your main accounts into this other account, and having access to your computer.
Mm-hmm.
So this person downloaded an app,
yep,
which they had instructed him to do, and mm-hmm. he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were able to hack his phone and they could get the numbers off the bank's security mm-hmm. numbers.
Yep.
And they proceeded to wipe out nearly $300,000, including on the credit card.
Yep, yep. And we're not talking about someone inexperienced here. This was an experienced person who had some...
They were convincing. They were incredibly convincing.
And the level of anxiety they create during this phone call, it's almost like panic sets in and panic fogs all sense of reality.
It does. And and this person, I do not doubt for a moment, believed that they were protecting us and doing the absolute best thing that they could do in those circumstances.
Yes.
But they do use, they use fear and they push you into
panic.
Yes. And they keep pushing you and pushing you and pushing you.
Yep.
So I don't doubt for a moment that he felt that he was doing the right thing, and felt that he was protecting the business.
Yep.
I'm a little more savvy with that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Probably because I'm more involved in the internet. I don't know why, but I realised straight away what had happened, straight away. So the big problem that you have at that point is you run to the bank, you call the bank, you run to the bank. The banks are so ill-equipped to deal with this sort of fraud because it's relatively new and they do not have the safeguards.
Right.
They do not have them. And so trying to explain to them what had happened and getting them to actually action it in a way that was going to prevent the money from leaving the country was impossible.
Yep.
And so once the money's out, it's gone.
It's gone.
We did work with a lovely police officer who managed to trace our funds to India.
Right.
And it bought gold, which is incredible for a company named Alchemy, don't you think?
Yeah, right. Interesting. Interesting. And I think you make a really valid point. From the bank's perspective, this was authorised transfers.
Yes.
This wasn't a case of their systems failed.
Uh-oh.
Their controls perhaps failed.
Yes.
And maybe the banks need to consider having multi-signatory on all bank accounts.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about one of the things that I found fascinating about you and Matt is once you'd moved through the emotional heartbreak of almost $300,000 missing from your account, you chose to do something pretty special. Talk a little bit about the choice that you made once you had moved through that realization and that emotional reaction.
You mean straight afterwards?
Yeah. What decision did you make in order to recover? You didn't pursue the person involved.
No.
You made a different decision. Talk a little bit about that process and what decision you made.
Well, during the first few days after the fraud had happened, I rang you, of course. Great help, wonderful help. And Beck, who is currently our general manager, was not in that position. But she was the one that said to me, I would like to step up.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to run the business while Matt's away while you sort this out. So I'm eternally grateful to her for that.
Mm-hmm.
She stepped into that position. She took over the daily running of the business so I could spend all day on the phone to the police and on the phone to the banks and on the phone to whoever I had to do. Once we realised the money was not going to be recovered, we invested in our business ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we took money from our own accounts and our own mortgages and our own whatever to keep it running, to keep it going, because we believed that it would recover.
Mm-hmm.
We truly believed that it would recover.
Yep.
Matt and I, when we get past the emotional point, we become incredibly logical and pragmatic and what needs to be done and how are we going to do that. And we never once fell into the pit of, well, that's it.
Yep.
Never once.
Mm-hmm.
We sat down and had a look at everything and again, it was our staff that rose to the surface in our concerns.
Mm-hmm.
We can't.
Were you transparent with them with what had happened?
Totally.
Right.
We got them together.
And got their buy-in. We're going to work our way through this and we're going to come out stronger, better, brighter.
We conduct our business like a community. We've always taken that approach. They're important to us because they have dedicated, many of them, years to our business.
Yep.
What we did was that we brought them together in a group. We explained what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
We explained that things were going to continue, that Matt and I had reinvested in the business, that we were going to push forward and we were asking them for their support.
Yep.
And they all rose like you wouldn't believe. They all stood up. They all, you know, helped us gain new clients and bring more work in and
deliver quality product. And
they did so well, which just reinforces our eternal gratitude to them and our strong sense of needing to look after them. So they were incredible. And it wasn't so much Matt and I that pushed the recovery of this business. It was us as a team, us as a group.
It's fascinating to me that you've been through such a painful experience of losing, again, $300,000, that something inside of Beck and something inside of you and Matt called you out to say, look, here we are. This is what we're dealing with. I'm going to trust you. You can trust me. Talk about that experience with Beck and taking on the responsibility and what's happened since then.
Yeah. She, Beck has been with us. She started as a receptionist 15 years ago.
Interesting.
And has shuffled her way up through the company. She was the head project manager at that time when this happened. I have always been relatively close to Beck. She has been wonderful support for me and I've worked well with her, and her and I have always worked brilliantly together. So when this all happened, it was a very natural thing for me to use her as a confidant.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she said she volunteered to step up and run the business, we were so impressed with that that she's still running the business.
Yeah.
So she is our number one. She's our general manager and she's doing the most fabulous job.
So out of the lowest moment of adversity, here's an opportunity to make different choices. I mean, I would describe a $300,000 fraud as probably one of the biggest failures any small business would want to or would be willing to recover from. But look at all of the things that have come as a result of that.
Yeah. Well, adversity breeds opportunity.
Yeah.
And all I kept saying to everybody was, hang on, there's opportunity. And it pointed our way forward.
Yep.
It showed us the way forward.
Yep.
So it's an unfortunate set of circumstances that allowed us to reiterate that community idea in our business.
Yep.
And connections grew stronger and partnerships between managements and departments grew stronger. And Matt and I have since had the opportunity to step back and allow them space to rise.
And be a resource when they need it.
Yeah.
So we had a guest on recently, Sam Elam, and she talked about the strength of, or the positives of, really open, transparent communication in a crisis moment. Can you think, how would you describe the way you communicated internally and externally as a result of this failure in internal control?
We made sure that we approached it with a degree of commitment from us.
Yeah,
we were aware rumor mills are everywhere, and we did not want rumours to begin and for people to feel threatened.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to put them in a position where they did not understand whether they had a job or whether they didn't. Mm-hmm. We went through that with COVID. Mm-hmm. We didn't need to relive that.
Sure.
So we decided that we would approach it with a great degree of confidence, that we were very prepared to reinvest and to believe in the company as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to believe in it.
Yep.
And we wanted them to do that as well.
Right.
So transparency about that situation allowed us to bring them in, to make them part of the solution, to make them part of the path, to say, we're not going to keep you on the outside and leave you in a state of fear while we sort this out. Mm-hmm. We're going to bring you in.
And they could see that you and Matt, despite him being in Sumatra during the difficult days, you were both committed to getting through this, helping them feel more certain.
Yep.
And you were holding on to the vision of what was possible.
Yep.
Yeah, interesting. Do you think your background in psychology helped you during that process? Or what was it that you called on inside of you to navigate?
I'm resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And we both love a challenge.
Mm-hmm. well, this is a challenge I'm sure you would have preferred not to have.
Yeah. It was, my background in psychology is a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it allows me to understand the emotions of everyone around me and especially our staff, what they were feeling. And it put me in a position where I was able to say to Matt, these people are going to feel fearful.
Mm-hmm.
If this rumour mill begins, they're going to feel fearful. Frightened, they might go look for other jobs. We have to address this head on.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, my psychology is not always the best thing for me,
right,
because I get too logical about my own emotion.
Okay. Yeah.
And then it internalizes and then I end up sick. And I did right. end up sick.
Right.
I ended up with a short stay in hospital from silent panic attacks. And,
right.
You know, so I do feel the ramifications of it, but I feel the responsibility to other people and I understand that I can fix it. And I believe in Matt and I understand that he is probably one of the best problem solvers you will ever meet in your life.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he can see a challenge and he knows his way around it. There was a moment there when we were shell-shocked. For the first two or three days, we literally...
couldn't believe it.
Couldn't talk about it. We couldn't... We were just in a state of absolute shell shock. But then our pragmatic side and our logic kicks in and we start going, right, what has to be done?
Yeah, and my experience of this process was you were also willing to be very transparent with the ATO, with your suppliers. It didn't just apply to the people internal to your business. I mean, I had conversations with the ATO saying, this is what's happened and can we get payment plans in place? And by being transparent and owning the loss, if you like, allowed us collectively and you as the business owners to put in place the things to help you through it.
Well, you're part of the community.
I'm very grateful to be part of the community and we, yes, it's been a long and very open working relationship and I think that's really important. Who you choose to be on the journey with is absolutely something that, whether it's employees, partners, outsourcers or whoever it is, that bond or that relationship, I told you, I'm inspired and so proud of the work you and Matt did.
Thank you.
Having lost this money, I mean, it's just a remarkable story. And you're now stronger, better, and you've now helped others be stronger, better.
Yeah.
And that's not something that comes easily.
Well, I have a great amount of joy in watching our people grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a great amount of joy in providing environments where they can.
Right.
I will say that was one of the hardest moments of my life and I'm incredibly thankful to you as well. But it was just, I felt protected and that gave me room to use logic and to work out what needed to be done and how this is going to be managed and how are we going to pay wages next week and what's going to happen there. And Matt's in the jungle in Sumatra and I get a text message maybe once a day and I'm thinking, well, do I pull money out of the mortgage or
right.
how do I manage this? And so then I would get a little text message and then there was half an hour of phone service, I think at 5:30 in the afternoon and
yep.
we would have to squeeze entire conversations into probably 15, 20 minutes before it dropped out.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, well, this is what I was thinking and how am I going to do that? And what do you think? Do you agree? What do you want me to do? Shall we do this? And so there were these really whirlwind conversations that went on in very short amounts of time.
It also sounded like Matt really trusted you in the middle of it all to...
He did.
So talk a little bit about how that dynamic works with your husband in a business that's being scammed. I mean, there must have been some difficult but also very rewarding conversations. Share a little bit of that.
There was. He was not going to go on that trip and I point blankly insisted and said, enough, you know, you've put this off twice due to COVID and your 50th birthday was now 3 years ago. It's time for you to go with his brother and a few mates. He kept saying to me as I was driving him to the airport, this doesn't feel right. I shouldn't be doing this. And I'm saying, you've put 20 years, 25 years into this business. This is very right. You get on that plane and you walk away from this because I'm going to need you to take over when you get back.
Yep.
And I'm going to put everything in place and work out what we need to do. And then when you come back, you can take over and I'm going to take a break. The real problem for me was at that I had been in and out and in and out and in and out of the business over many years.
Yep.
And at the point this happened, I hadn't worked in the business for 18 months.
And set design, construction is not your skill set.
It's not my skill set. Right. But it's also that I didn't know anything about our accounts. Barely knew which banks we banked with because we had changed that the year before. And there was a lot I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And the things that were going to undo me was that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't what I did know, it was what I didn't.
Right.
So with the help of Beck, I would nut out, okay, who does our accounts and what happens here and, you know, who's taking care of this and what company do we work with for this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And I ended up with a writing pad that was an inch thick you know, dialogue from every conversation I had with you and every conversation I had with whoever I was talking to, and that would follow me home at night. And then when Matt would ring, I would lay it out and go, right, this happened today and this happened today and this happened. What do you think of this and what do you think of that? And he would say, yeah, I agree with that. Okay, what are we going to do here? Should I take money out of the mortgage? Yeah, do that. And then I would run back into work the next day and I would put all of that into play, and then I would wait for the next phone call. By the time he came home, he was away for 2 weeks, I think, and by the time he came home, I fell in a heap.
Right.
Because the stress levels were
intense,
through the roof. I was fine after a day or two, but then I ended up going. I ended up in a negotiation with the bank about the loss of funds and their responsibility and our responsibility and yada yada yada. And ended up working with AFCA.
Right. Okay.
Didn't get far.
Yeah.
Because again, this was somebody that had rights, to our accounts who did this. Mm-hmm. So there's only so much wiggle room with that. So once he returned home, I ended up full time working with AFCA and the bank and the police to work out recovery, and he went back into the business to try and keep everybody buoyed up. You know, we need to get more work in, let's go, guys. And so he took that approach and I worked at the other end. And in the end, as I said, bought gold in India. Yeah. So that was
unfortunately
the end of that.
Not your gold.
No.
The hearing you recount, it seems to me like with such a big adversity, what you did was break it down into little steps.
Yep.
And with Beck and with Matt, you were able to celebrate the wins as a result of breaking it down into small steps. Had you taken it all on as just one big problem to solve?
Yeah. I know enough.
Is that a way you approach?
It's a way
failures?
I approach everything. Mm. Yeah. I break everything down, and not really on a conscious level. I tend to go, right, what's the first thing that needs to be done?
Mm-hmm.
And then step that through and then move on. I will not allow myself to be overwhelmed.
Interesting.
I won't allow.
So how do you deal with that? Because we all get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
When you feel that level of anxiety or that overwhelm starting to take control, what do you do to
calm it
work
down?
Through it?
I just kind of remind myself that it is what it is,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost.
Right.
No amount of running over this or stressing out is going to change a thing. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do we fix it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Matt and I complement each other very well, that we're both good problem solvers and we can work very well in a collaborative way to get through things and pass things.
Mm.
And when he's down, I'm up. When I'm up, when I'm down, he's up.
Yep.
So one of us tends to buoy the other up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I just understand stress well enough, unfortunately, to know that it is best handled in small increments,
right,
not big ones.
Right.
So I just made sure that the first thing we had to do was pay our staff.
Right.
That was our first priority.
So set your priorities, and this is what. And some people have to pay the price.
Yeah. Matt and I paid the price. We didn't get paid for a while.
Surely.
We didn't get paid for quite a while, and we just. I'm great at priorities. I can work out what needs to be done first. Maybe because I'm a mother, that's the way we operate with our kids, I guess, what needs to be done first, second and third.
Well, I think that's something that I don't think enough people recognise or acknowledge in a small business owner. The buck stops at your feet. This
Absolutely.
Wasn't your doing. You didn't create this situation, but nobody else was going to solve it.
It's irrelevant that it was created by somebody else. It was our problem regardless.
Yeah. It's and your mortgage.
Yep.
It's you not getting paid.
Yep.
It's your lifestyle that impacts, you know.
Yeah.
These are the stories that I love to tell about small business owners because I don't think we celebrate enough what you guys do in going about every day. It's all good and well to have an idea, but turning that idea into a business that creates jobs, that creates opportunities, it fills solutions for clients. That's a whole stream of activity, and it sounds like the way you approach that is small steps.
Yep, I always do. And I guess Matt and I are pretty good at seeing the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
But it never overwhelms us. Like, we always know where we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that to get there, it means incremental steps.
So now we're, almost 2 years on, right?
Yeah, how funny is that?
What are you most proud of as a result of this situation?
I'm proud of my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of our staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really proud of our business. Mm. It is a wonderful business. Mm-hmm. It allows space for people to be creative. It allows space for people to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It allows space for us to rest now.
Mm.
I mean, it's a lovely thing for Matt and I to keep a handle on the business and to trust others to do it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no 7 a.m. phone calls anymore for him to check on everybody to make sure everybody's... None of that.
Yep.
I don't even think he thinks about it for a couple of days a week. And, you know, we've retrained our beautiful clients to contact our project managers, so deflected the thousands of emails that he used to get.
Yep.
And our project managers work beautifully with our clients. So there is really, I mean, I guess the whole point of a small business is to eradicate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the goal has to be to get rid of yourself. And you have
by empowering those on the journey with you.
Yeah, and don't get heavily entrenched in it because it will overwhelm you and there'll be a day when you just think, I can't do this anymore. So if you if you can manage your own approach to your business in incremental back steps and allow people to fill those spaces, then you'll end up with a business that can function without you, and that's the end goal.
Well, and you mentioned earlier, this was 20 years of investment of time, effort, creative. Matt had created a foundation that was strong enough and resilient enough to face a big fraud and come through stronger and better. That's a reflection of him and of you in that journey.
Mm.
And the concept of breaking down a failure into its small steps, is that how you approach all failures? We focused on this fraud because it's a pretty big one and I think it's relevant to our listeners. Yeah. But the approach works with all failures?
Yeah. I think it's all learnings.
Right.
Everything is a learning experience.
Yeah.
You find out more about yourself. You find out more about the people around you. I mean, let's face it, the worst of situations is the thing that's going to make you understand who you're working with and what you're doing.
Mm.
It's pretty quick. You can understand people's characters best in the adverse moments than you can in the good moments.
Yeah. So I think it's being open to the learning.
Yes.
I have a friend who refers it to as flearning. And I think that's really relevant because failure, it's inevitable. We all make mistakes. We all have shortcomings. We all choose the wrong person. I think the ability to evaluate and make decisions and not let it carry on. That's a key. We've talked about this with other guests.
Before the podcast, I was talking to a girlfriend, and this is my favorite line, and it's the thing that always gets me through. When you are feeling overwhelmed or stressed, the best thing you can do is see yourself as seaweed and float.
Interesting.
If it's when you push against things.
Mm.
If you have some level of trauma or something in your life and you're pushing against it, that's going to cause you more trauma. You just have to lay back, envision yourself as seaweed and float on the currents of whatever's going on.
Yeah.
And you'll pop out the other side.
I often describe small business as river rafting because the guy on the boat or the gal on the boat who's choosing the course is bumped off course by a rock that you didn't see or didn't expect or an eddy or something. And the challenge of small business is course correcting and being able to say, right, now I'm on this side of the river. Holy cow, this is what's headed at me now. I need to figure out how to get to the other side of the river. Yeah. And it's close to the seaweed analogy where you just got to course correct.
You got it, you do. And the other thing that Matt and I have learned along the way is to take the emotion out of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you start a business, it is an emotional journey because you're investing yourself.
For sure.
But as the business grows, there has to be a point where you say, this is the business and this is my life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not one thing.
Yeah.
So you have to be able, as the business matures, to create that divide and to remove the emotion from the business as much as humanly possible and to operate it as an entity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it grows of its own accord anyway. And there is that point where small business feels like a runaway horse and trying to rein that in can be quite difficult.
So I was talking to another client about this earlier in the week, and the concept that a small business evolves out of an idea or a pursuit or a passion or something, but there's so much more to it than that. And if left on its own devices, culture will evolve in whatever way culture will, unless you are intentional about it. Client relationships will evolve unless you're intentional about it. So bringing the intention along with the idea.
Yep.
It sounds like you and Matt have found a good balance of bringing both things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have.
Yep.
Our culture is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. How do you think Beck would describe your culture?
I think she would say it needs work.
Yeah.
It's not a cultural issue, but there is, we've always had departments that aren't gelling well together.
Mm-hmm.
The production and the logistics have issues.
And natural tension.
Yeah, natural tension.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, she would probably say that we need to work on that, which we are.
Yep.
And that's part of the reason that I'll be doing these little workshops is to help people understand that, you know, you're not the end of the line.
Right.
Like whatever you're failing at, if you don't mention that and allow us to help you, then you might not catch the ramifications for that, but somebody down the line will.
For sure.
So we're going to be conducting these to try and shift that tiny little bit of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of our culture is wonderful. We are a League of Nations.
Yep.
With
centered
people,
around people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All from all over the planet who are just wonderful, and their well-being is the foremost in our minds.
And with that guiding stick, it's easy then to make decisions.
It is. Yeah. And respect is the absolute pinnacle of that culture.
Yes.
Absolute respect.
Yep.
And
behaving with integrity. That's certainly my experience of you and Matt, was you came from a place of wanting to do the right thing.
Yep. Yeah, a friend of mine is doing her PhD in business, and she's going to be studying our business.
Interesting!
And the culture, because it is people based, it's people centered, and she's comparing it to a large corporation like Optus or something, or whatever.
Yeah.
So she's going to be doing a
interesting
PhD on it.
Yeah, yeah, I hold culture very high in my priority list, and we have a wonderful team of people who turn up and give their best every day, and ultimately that's all I can ask. The failures are on me.
Yep.
As long as people turn up and give their best, then I think anything's possible.
It is. But culture is also an extension of leadership. So if Matt and I conduct ourselves in an empathetic way, if we are respectful and we are kind and we are considerate, then that is what emulates out through.
Yep.
That becomes the standard. Leadership is a really interesting thing because I'm going to be working with Beck on that.
Yep.
Not that she isn't a great leader, she already
sure.
is.
Sure.
But there is that, I think one of the hardest things to learn as a leader is how to remove the emotional response or to take things personally or to, you know.
That's a good reminder.
Yeah. That emotional response is the hardest part of learning leadership, where you have to be able to not see it as a personal attack if somebody is unhappy, or not a judgment on your work, or not a... So that's mm-hmm. stuff that I'll be working on with her as well.
So as you continue this journey, how do you describe success? Is success a combination of things? What's most important to you in terms of success?
That's a very good question. I think success is when people have the ability to be their authentic selves in their work environment. I think that's successful. So it's a lovely thing that if Beck's got a problem, she knows that she can pick up the phone and have vent with me.
Yep.
Even though I'm the business owner, she can vent and go, I don't know what to do here. And I think success is people being authentic. And I think success is also sharing with our staff. I think it is people feeling they have the freedom to be their authentic selves and grow within that space.
Yeah, I think sometimes, particularly in bigger businesses, we lose the concept that these are people.
Mm.
And allowing them or giving them permission to be authentic, to be vulnerable, to, you know, there's a lot of research around this whole concept of vulnerability and how that works as a leader. It's okay for them to see
yep.
that we don't have all the answers. It's okay for them to see that we struggle. And in those moments where we can't control emotions, that it's still okay.
Yeah.
We're human just as much as they're human, and the making it safe for each other to have those responses, but also to learn from them.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I really do. I think that Matt and I work on our own authenticity hard. I mean, we're pretty, the pair of us are open books, really.
Yep.
And we want to make sure that people feel safe enough to be themselves.
And what about the fear that comes with being open book? That someone will take advantage if they see you in a vulnerable moment, or they see you in a way that...
No one has that power.
Not strong. Right.
No one has that power over me.
Yeah.
And this is the psychology talking again, I think. I'm not entangled with other people's emotions.
Right.
So I understand that my response is my response. Nobody can make me feel anything.
Right.
I'm quite willing to be vulnerable, because other people's opinions no longer matter.
Right.
I've fought enough battles to understand what I'm made of.
Yeah, right.
I have zero concern about whether I come off as, you know, weak or... Because I know I'm...
And yet you're open to the feedback in a way that, but how can I be better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, living as an open book doesn't just mean that I'm going to tell you everything.
Or that people can walk all over you.
No, it means that I'm here to learn from you.
For sure.
As well.
Yeah.
But people can't walk all over me.
No.
Because I won't have it. I've got boundaries.
For sure. For sure.
Very strong.
That's a very important point. Being vulnerable doesn't mean that you're willing to accept anything in return.
Oh, no.
Being vulnerable is that I am willing to let other people see my humanity in an authentic way,
yeah,
even when I'm perhaps not being authentic to my humanity.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
It is. And vulnerability is a bit of a superpower. And there's a lot of work being done in psychology with Brené Brown.
Yeah, Brené Brown. Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, where it says that, I mean, probably one of the hardest things that we all find difficult in the world is the lack of humanity. So, you know, we flick on the news every night and we just see a terrible lack of humanity. So vulnerability is where our humanity lives, then let's make it infectious. Because
100%.
That's the way to save the world.
I couldn't agree with you more. We've lost that sense of human is at the center of everything.
Yep.
Humanity is what we're about, and connection. And the way to connect with people is let's be vulnerable.
Yep.
Let's be kind. Let's be, and Brené Brown talks about awkward, brave and kind.
Yep.
I use that as a principle even in my moments where I'm not handling things well.
Mm.
I still want to try and be kind.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the forefront. I mean, I guess that Matt and I have a relationship that's built on kindness as well.
Well, not only with you two, but everybody else you come into contact with.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I don't flip out every now and then, but it's usually Matt that catches the ramifications of that.
Right.
But there isn't much point to a relationship or a marriage if it isn't based in complete and utter kindness. Mm. What's the point? Get divorced.
Right.
You know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, a fascinating conversation. You've found this way to balance your creative energy with business, break down failures, problems into small steps, execute a vision, enroll others into the vision, empower them. All of the things that I subscribe to in the way that we build a business. Is there any final insight you'd like to share in terms of how you balance all of these demands to allow yourself to be human?
I think that life is short.
Mm.
I know that I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So life has to be about joy and happiness. There isn't anything else. And no matter what you do, you have to invest that kind of joy into everything. And it doesn't mean that we only do joyful things. It means that we do things and we find joy in them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we run a business and, yeah, we've had some trauma and, yeah, we don't know what the future brings, but we know how to smile and we know how to be kind and we know how to laugh.
Yeah.
And whatever comes from the future will be what it is, and I'll be seaweed.
Ultimately, we'll all be seaweed.
We'll all be seaweed.
Well, one of the things I've really admired in you and Matt and in Beck is the courage and the willingness to back yourselves.
Yeah.
And that is we're talking a lot about it in this podcast with other small business owners. The willingness or the courage to take one more step in the face of failure to try and figure it out.
Yeah.
We're not perfect. Yep. We're not going to come up with the right answers all the time, but the willingness to take one more step.
It would have been easy to throw in the towel. It would have been so easy.
Yep.
And I'm not going to say we didn't contemplate it, but it was about a second.
Yep.
And then it was over.
And that seems to be a sense of what small business is about.
Yeah.
Sure, we all face failure in a way that it's all too hard, I'm going to walk away.
But yep.
That's a fleeting moment, and then you're like, okay.
Yep.
Now what?
Because we aren't just making ourselves happy and comfortable with this business, but we're making 18 other people.
And all your clients.
Yep.
One of the proudest moments I have is when I got a picture from somebody who had gone to the Zero conference. And in the parking lot was the Alchemy truck. Yes. And I'm like, you know what? I've played a small part in the role of getting Alchemy to this point at this time. Amazing.
That was amazing, actually.
Yep. So, Terry, thank you for your insights.
My absolute pleasure.
If people wanted to contact you or Alchemy, how best would they find your business?
We on our website.
Yep.
So it's alchemyco.com.
Yep.
.au. You'll find us there and all the work that we do. And
fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And thank you for listening. Please remember to review and subscribe for new episodes and content. This is the Anti-Failure Podcast, and I'm Chris Kendall, your host.